The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
President Biden is gearing up for a major meeting with Pope Francis tomorrow as he makes his way through Europe. They're expected to discuss a wide range of issues from climate change to the pandemic. President Biden's Catholic faith has become a controversial flashpoint amid criticism from conservatives and bishops over his support for abortion rights. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the pair will focus on what they agree on rather than their differences.
There's a great deal of agreement and overlap with the president and Pope Francis on a range of issues: poverty, combating the climate crisis, ending the COVID-19 pandemic. These are all hugely important, impactful issues that will be the centerpiece of what their discussion is when they meet.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. It is good to be back here with you today. Thanks for tuning in. A lot going on Capitol Hill, huh? It was the White House spokesperson, Jen Psaki, there. And that was an update from CBS earlier today on the president's upcoming trip to the Vatican. You're going to hear about that coming up as well. He got delayed. His takeoff this morning was pushed back a little bit because he went to Capitol Hill trying to, make sure that this deal gets done. But he's airborne now. He's on his way to Europe. And at the moment, we'll see what unfolds. Mostly, he's going overseas for a couple of reasons, mostly for a world meeting of leaders on climate change. And that's being held right now in Glasgow, Scotland. But before that happens, he'll be meeting tomorrow with the Holy Father. And it's not the first time that he met with the Pope. Of course, Joe Biden's only the second U.S. president ever to be Catholic. But, President Biden, Pope Francis will meet. I know a lot of people are going to be wondering what's going to be said, what that exchange will be like. Pope Francis comforted Joe Biden. You might remember back in 2015 when his son Beau died, and the two of them also conferred privately on cancer research. But there's a lot of stuff going on right now that may have changed their relationship. Biden is now the president, and it makes him not just the leader of the free world, but the second Catholic in U.S. history to hold that office. And a lot of Catholics are looking at how he handles himself, what policies he endorses, how he lives out his Catholic faith. He shifted his position. We've talked about this. I know. We've talked about this a lot. He shifted his position on abortion. And unfortunately, not for the better. And I'm not going to dive into that too deeply here. I just don't understand how you do that. This is pretty much a black and white issue for a lot of people. But to really evolve in a way that is not rational, I just don't understand that unless politics, fame, power is more important to you than your faith and freedom and life. I mean, I don't know. I can't explain the evolution in that direction, especially when you have children as well as he does. But who knows? We need to pray for him. I'm hoping the exchange with the Pope will be good. The U.S. bishops, they're going to be meeting next month, too. That's another thing. And one of the things they're going to be discussing, and we'll talk about this a lot, I think, in the new year, is their focus on the fact that so many Catholics have abandoned really true belief in the Eucharist, right? And they are going to be discussing what they call Eucharistic integrity. They want to be able to make sure that people... There's a revival in the Eucharist. They want to make sure that we're able to receive the Eucharist worthily. And that goes for Joe Biden. It goes for Drew Mariani. It goes for you, right? We need to make sure that we receive that sacrament, that we understand what we're receiving and we're properly disposed to that. And part of that, of course, this meeting, there's confusion across the country. Look at Archbishop Cordiglione, who's been on the program with me, right? In his parish, in his diocese, is the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, right? What about in Washington, D.C. or in Wilmington, Delaware, the bishops there and Joe Biden? Both Pelosi and Biden call themselves devout Catholics, and they're not alone. There's other Catholic politicians as well. Yet they support abortion. So the bishops, I think, are going to want to be on the same page in how they address these issues. So after the Pope has numerous times, he called, he's very clear on this. I know some people are divided on this Holy Father. I don't think he can be any more clear when it comes to abortion. He's called it murder. He says it's like hiring a hitman to solve a problem, right? There are plenty of calls for him to rebuke Joe Biden. Now, whether or not he's going to do that is yet to be seen. And maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe he'll be more pastoral with him, but we'll see. Although, you know, it was really weird, and I don't know why this went down. I'll just give you a little side note, something that popped up on my radar earlier today regarding the Pope and Joe Biden. The Vatican suddenly announced, I saw this report, that they're not going to be, there will not be a live broadcast. They're not going to do this live. They're not going to provide a live broadcast of the meeting between the two leaders, nor the customary exchange of gifts. You know, the Vatican press office, they provided no explanation for why the live broadcasts of Biden's visit had been trimmed to cover just the arrival of the president's motorcade in the courtyard. That's it. You know, he's going to pull into the Apostolic Palace here. They're going to cover that. A Monsignor is going to greet him. Instead, the Vatican said, look, we're going to come out. We're going to provide edited footage for you. We're going to give you the edited version of this encounter, and we're going to just give it to accredited media. What's that all about? What is that all about? We know, you know, how people are divided over the president and the Pope. So to have this encounter, maybe it's a prudent move on the part of the Vatican. You know, who knows how the exchange will go, what will be said, what will be recorded. Why not release something that doesn't create division or maybe even confusion? I don't know. I just found that as a little side note, something that grabbed my attention. I thought, that's really strange. What's up, right? What's up? Well, I'll continue to follow it. I'll let you know. Yesterday, though, the Vatican announced that it's considering taking up an invitation to Pope Francis given by Canadian bishops to visit their neighbors to the north, you know, to our neighbors, I should say, to the north. There was this controversy. I didn't dive a whole lot into it. We talked about it briefly. There was this controversy with some residential schools there. And I don't know if you were familiar with those stories. Those schools were set up by the government. They were run by different entities, including the Catholic Church, in order to inculturate, I should say, really the native peoples. They found unmarked graves of about 250 children at one school. The school happened to be run by nuns. Native groups in Canada, they protested and they demanded a meeting with the Pope. There will be meetings in December at the Vatican between the Pope and the native groups over the issue, but it wasn't the nuns who killed these kids, right? I mean, there's a whole story here, and honestly, I think it should be the Canadian government and their educational system that should be doing their mea culpa and not necessarily the Pope. But here's what the Canadian broadcast company reported last night on the Pope's agreement to visit. Listen.
The Vatican says Pope Francis has agreed to visit Canada. This is in response to an invitation from the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops. It appears he has taken up the offer. It is part of the process of reconciliation for the decades of abuse and forced assimilation suffered by Indigenous children who were forced to attend residential schools, so many of them run by the Catholic Church. A statement from the Catholic Bishops of Canada says, in anticipation of the visit, a delegation of Indigenous survivors, elders, knowledge keepers, and youth will travel to the Vatican December the 17th to the 20th to speak with the Pope.
All right, so we'll see what comes from that. I don't have time to unpack that whole story for you. We talked about it in the past, but we'll see what surfaces when the Holy Father makes that visit. But speaking of Canada, one other thing. I don't know how you feel about this one. I wouldn't be too happy. The Bishop of Grand Falls, he's the bishop in the eastern province of Newfoundland and Labrador up there. He's requiring anyone who wants to go to Mass or to any kind of service conducted at churches, you've got to present your proof of vaccination. So that's for anyone 12 or older. And the bishop's requiring this because, you know, the province is requiring it for public gatherings. So the church is saying, okay, we'll do the same thing. That comes a month after the Archbishop of Moncton in New Brunswick had tried to do the same thing. But pushback was so great that the move got canceled. And I don't know what we're going to see up there. I hate to think that you can't get the Mass unless you have a vaccination card. I don't know what the population of Canada is in terms of their vaccination rates, but I know there are sometimes health-related issues. Pregnant women may not want it. I know there's conscientious objections, and we've dealt with this for months now, but we'll see how that plays out as well. Just keeping that on your radar. That's Canada. Here in the U.S., CNBC reported that labor unions and industry lobbyists and private individuals, they've been meeting with the Biden administration and trying to convince them to hold back on implementing the vaccine, this vaccine mandate for businesses. So Canada's saying you need to come to, if you're going to come to Mass in this province and to my diocese, you got to be vaccinated. The president on December 8th, as I mentioned, issued a mandate for all businesses that have employees of 100 people or more. And they're going to be fined if they allow people to work for their private company if they're not vaccinated. And the fines can be pretty big. So here's an interesting bit of input from Texas Representative Randy Weber. He told Washington Watch what he thinks about the mandates and what they mean for this holiday season. Listen.
Well, join me now to talk about the latest on this is Congressman Randy Weber. He's a member of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, where he serves as the ranking member on the Energy Subcommittee. He represents the 14th Congressional District of Texas. So what's your reaction to these big businesses lobbying the administration to push this off until after the holiday season?
It makes sense from a business standpoint. It makes sense from a liberty personal decision standpoint. It makes sense for helping our already completely stressed supply chains, people who are having that personal liberty fight about whether they have to be instructed to take the mandate or the vaccine or lose their jobs. It makes sense, and it's doubtful that the president will listen.
All right, so we will. We'll continue to follow that. It may affect you. I don't know how big your business is, you know, how difficult a situation this might actually present for you. But, those vaccine mandates are coming. The problem they say in terms of what this means, not just for business, but, what it means for your Christmas and just for the supply chain. If the mandate goes into effect, it would hit companies' employees just when they need their employees the most. And that's during the Christmas season. Can you imagine trucking companies? I saw one report where trucking companies said that their drivers would rather quit than get vaccinated. And that, of course, would, only complicate the whole supply chain issue even more, especially since the trucking industry is already short about 80,000 drivers. And, we'll see whether the administrators listen to this reason or not. I don't think we will. I don't. I think we're going to see. I think we'll continue to see a little bit more. So anyway, a lot to get into today. David Ditch is going to be stopping by. I want to talk to him, too. We'll get his take. We got a lot to get into. I want to talk to you about a piece of news that I saw that really caused me some serious pause over the weekend. And, of course, that was with the state of Illinois. And if you live in that state, you're going to want to stay tuned to that. Coming up in a little bit, I'll tell you what happened in the wee hours of the night, all right? And it is not good for children or for families. But that's coming up in just a quick second here. And you are, of course, always welcome to join me anytime. 888-914-9149 to get in. But let's talk spending. Let's talk about what is happening right now on Capitol Hill and how this might all ultimately play out. President Biden, of course, was late leaving the country because, he was trying to patch together, a deal that would keep the Democratic caucus together on the infrastructure bill and on the social spending plan. Now, the original plan called for more than $3 trillion in spending. But Senator Joe Manchin, he's from West Virginia, and of course, Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, they said that they're not going to support that much spending, especially given what's going on with inflation. And look, the two of these people have been unbelievable. The two of them are really unmovable in their opposition. It meant Democrats had to go back to the drawing board. They thought they had the majority. If it wasn't for Sinema and for Manchin, you could have seen the filibuster done away with. You could have seen a couple states added to the union. You could have saw trillions of dollars worth of spending. You could have seen the Supreme Court being packed. You could have experienced the reshaping of this country. You really could. But these two have really been kind of juggernauts. And this is a big day. This is really a big day. I mean, they've been concerned about the amount of money that was being spent. The president, of course, came up with a plan that cuts that spending in half, but it doesn't seem as if that's what, you know, Manchin and Sinema want. Both tweeted out today that they're looking forward to, you know, robust discussions. Neither one said, well, you're going to support that particular bill. I'll share with you a little bit of the president. He spoke earlier today before heading over to Europe. And in case you missed it, here's just a few words from President Biden's press conference this morning, unveiling the new number, the new infrastructure package, the new total, $1.75 trillion. Here's some of what he had to say.
Today, I'm pleased to announce that after months of tough and thoughtful negotiations, I think we have an historic, I know we have a historic economic framework. It's a framework that will create millions of jobs, grow the economy, invest in our nation and our people, turn the climate crisis into an opportunity, and put us on a path not only to compete, but to win the economic competition for the 21st century against China and every other major country in the world. It's fiscally responsible. It's fully paid for. 17 Nobel Prize winners in economics have said it will lower the inflationary pressures on the economy. And over the next 10 years, it will not add to the deficit at all. It will actually reduce the deficit, according to economists. I want to thank my colleagues in the Congress for their leadership. We spent hours and hours and hours over months and months working on this. No one got everything they wanted, including me. But that's what compromise is. That's consensus. And that's what I ran on. I've long said compromise and consensus are the only way to get big things done in a democracy, important things done for the country. I know it's hard. I know how deeply people feel about the things that they fight for. But this framework includes historic investments in our nation and in our people.
All right, let's talk about it. David Ditch is a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation focusing on federal spending and fiscal policy. David, I'm grateful for your time. Thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on. I wasn't planning on touching on this, but that clip, there's something that President Biden said that I think is really important. Yeah. He said that consensus is the only way to get things done in a democracy, and he's absolutely right. Our founding fathers set up our legislature and, you know, the executive branch with checks and balances with the goal of limiting how much is done nationwide, because they understood that it would be really hard to get to make everyone happy if all the decisions were made from the top down. So the federal government is supposed to be limited. This bill is attempting to drive through massive changes with the slimmest of majorities, which is antithetical to the way our system of government was set up.
Yeah, it's a really good point. It was big. In fact, it was even bigger. It got cut and cut again. Let's talk about that. I'm sure you're probably familiar. What were some of the things that were cut out of the $3 trillion bill? I mean, even this morning, throughout last night, too, things are in, things are out, things are constantly changing. What were the big-ticket numbers that reduced us from $3 trillion to $1.75?
One of the real headaches right now is that, so there are certain organizations, like there's the, you know, there's the Congressional Budget Office, there's the Joint Committee on Taxation. We count on these nonpartisan, fairly reliable groups who do very good work to tell us, okay, you know, here's what's in the bill, here's how much it costs, here's how much these, you know, tax provisions should bring in, you know, here's the balance, you know, is it going to increase the debt or decrease the debt? We don't have anything along those lines right now. And if they are expecting the House to vote on a package that's over 1,600 pages that would spend, you know, between tax credits and regular spending, $1.75 trillion, it's mind-boggling. I will say I went through over the last couple hours with the new text that's been released. There are some things that I've been looking at in the original bill. You know, certain things are in, certain things are out. So there had been what I saw is very much a 1-2 punch for trying to use taxpayer dollars as seed money for environmental activists. One part of that is out, which is an $8 billion quote-unquote Climate Corps jobs program. But the bigger portion is still in. They would spend $10 billion funding quote-unquote environmental justice programs at colleges and universities. And I have to wonder exactly what kind of jobs people with those degrees are going to qualify for when they graduate.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. I mean, some of the stuff that's in this does not need to be there. Sinema and Manchin, have been real juggernauts in the advancement of this. Let's talk about them. They don't support everything that's in this. What happens if they don't support it overall? I mean, this thing is not... Yeah, it's not yet been voted on. What happens to it and to the budget come December when current funding runs out? And where do you think they are? I know you've probably been following both of them. Are they being pushed to comply? I mean, how critical are they and where are they on this 1.75?
I think that Democratic leadership has been trying to be careful, certainly more careful than the progressive left in terms of how they manage Sinema and Manchin. It's really impossible to say whether Sinema and Manchin are going to support this. For example, they've said they don't want to pass something that would lead to a huge increase in the national debt. We don't know whether this would or not. It will take weeks for the scorekeepers to tally this up. We have no idea whether they're comfortable with this high an amount of spending. We have no idea whether they're comfortable with this high an amount of tax increases and this approach to the tax increases. And they are being careful not to say that they approve it because they haven't had a chance to review this thing either.
Yeah. I heard the president say, like, it's not going to cost anything. In fact, there's more money going to be coming in than will be supposedly going out. They're going to raise more than the 1.75 that they're going to spend. How true is that? I mean, nothing is free. You know, I don't know whether these things have sunsets in them and they're going to expire or what's happening. But he claims that they have the revenue and this will cause nothing. And I'm all about infrastructure. I'm all about real infrastructure, bridges and roads and things along those lines. The social spending stuff has me very concerned. But your thoughts on the reality that this is not going to hurt America economically?
Well, first of all, when he says that there's no cost, and initially I think it was a little bit of a verbal slip-up, and since then they've quintupled down on this talking point. Yeah. It's the equivalent of saying that if you empty out your bank account and empty out your retirement account and go buy a Corvette or a Lamborghini, that it didn't cost anything just because you didn't go into debt. It's absolutely nonsense. Even if this thing is fully paid for with tax hikes, which again, I'm profoundly skeptical that it will be. But even if it was, those tax hikes represent a cost. And the cost is going to be imposed on the American economy. We're going to see less investment, which is going to mean fewer jobs. It's going to mean slower wage growth. But also, this thing is a massive gimmick. You have all these programs with 1 or 3 or 5 years of spending that they're going to try to then, in a couple of years, ask for more money on, but all these tax hikes are over 10 years. Yeah. That's going to mean they're front-loading the spending, which is going to put pressure on inflation.
Yeah, and they claim that in his address today, I was listening to it, he claims that experts are claiming that this will take off inflationary pressures. I don't know how true that is. I only have a moment or two left. Let me get a final thought for you on something else here, too. The president wants the House to vote on it today. Two things here. One, do you think it's going to happen? And then two, progressives right now are threatening to sink the infrastructure bill without a larger spending package. So where are we as you are reading it?
My gosh, if they actually try to get this package voted on the House floor today with only a couple hours notice, I think there'll be a bit of a revolt. There are a handful of moderate Democrats in the House caucus who I don't think want to be put in this position. And if it doesn't get voted on today, if the big social package doesn't get voted on, then I think the progressives are not going to vote for the infrastructure bill.
Hey, I want to thank you, David, for your perspective. It's an unfolding story. We'll see what happens in the hours and the days ahead for sure. Thank you for your time today. Really appreciate your insight.
Take care, Drew.
Thank you. That's David Dedge. She's a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. As I said, he focuses on federal spending and fiscal policy. You can check him out at heritage.org. All right, I'm going to take a quick pause. When we come back, wait till you hear what happened in the state of Illinois and what's happening around the country. This is something that should alarm every American. I'll fill you in. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
A debate pitting abortion rights versus parental rights moves into the Illinois House.
This follows last night's controversial vote in the state Senate to repeal a law that requires parents be notified before minors get abortions.
While the country waits for the Supreme Court to rule on controversial abortion limits, Illinois Democrats push to remove what's considered the last abortion restriction in this state.
So if there was a time that we wanted to reinforce that Illinois is a pro-choice state, it would be right now.
Tuesday night, the Illinois Senate voted to repeal the law that requires parents or guardians to be notified when girls under 18 seek an abortion. It's a debate that brought faith leaders out to Springfield.
Essentially, it is not even really a religious issue. It is a matter of parental rights and the best interests of children.
The repeal bill narrowly passed in the Senate, with some moderate Democrats siding with the Republicans, who say this is about parental rights.
This bill is a slap in the face to the thousands of parents around the state who simply want nothing more than to be able to support their child when they're making these decisions.
But the ACLU of Illinois argues not all minors can safely talk to their parents. Since the law went into effect 8 years ago, the ACLU has represented 575 young people who went to court to bypass telling a guardian.
Who would ever want to go see a judge and have to explain, you know, personal intimate details about your life and your family and reproductive decision making? I mean, it's sort of heartbreaking to have to tell people that they have to go through this process.
Now we are watching this bill in the House, and the clock is ticking because the fall session ends on Thursday.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's something else, isn't it? That's, to me, was very, interesting news going on in the pro-life world right now. In a couple other stories here, I'm going to lay this out for you, and we'll talk about it. Washington, D.C., I also saw another piece where the assistant police chief, a guy named Dickerson, stunned listeners at a community meeting. He told them, or she, I should say, not he, it was a woman, when she was a young cadet, right? And this was news a couple days ago. She had become pregnant and was told that she had to have an abortion to keep her job. The day after that revelation, Maggie's saying, what? Shocking. I mean, it's absolutely horrible, absolutely horrible. The day after that particular revelation, there was another member of the police department that came forward and said the same thing happened to her. So it wasn't, you know, a one-and-done thing. Apparently, this was some of the policy, and it allegedly happened while Marion Barry was the mayor. And right now, there's a lawsuit. I think there's a $100 million lawsuit against the city's police department for abuse and retaliation. So life, we treat it with such disregard, don't we? There's a bill right now in the House, another bit of news here for you, called the Family Violence Prevention Service Improvement Act. A lot of words in those acts, right? And this is supposed to help prevent domestic abuse and to give its victims access to services so they can overcome what is a real tragedy, a real horror, right? It's a terrible situation for anyone to be in. The bill sponsors have added some language, though. Yeah, I was like, really? What was the language they added? Well, the language kowtows to their agenda. According to Catholic Vote, where I saw this, they're requiring organizations, presumably including Catholic ones and other religious charities as well, such as, let's say, a woman's shelter. They want them to honor new sexual orientation and gender identity non-discrimination criteria. That's what they say. And if you don't do that, you don't qualify for the grants. So there's a whole bunch of language throughout the bill, but there's also language to directly fund abortion, all right? Directly have money go to support abortion. And there's no Hyde Amendment provision in the bill either. So that means that, you know, the funding would be completely legal. So this is where we are right now. This is the preeminent fight of our day. This is the most important issue of your life and of my life. But, you know, I mentioned this before. I talk about how sometimes these really sinister bills get passed in the darkness of the night, right? Something like that happened last night. Last night, the state of Illinois, and I want to focus on this in greater detail today, and you're more than welcome to join me. Around 11:30 local time last night in the evening, the House passed a measure that repealed the state's parental notification law. And I said to my wife when I read this, what's the logic for that? I mean, what is the impetus for taking away parental notification? All it does is endanger the child. The parent knows what's best for their child, at least in most cases, in a majority of those cases. Yeah, I defer, of course, with the parent. When a parent's taken out of the equation and their 15-year-old gets pregnant, or the 13-year-old, or who knows how old that child is, are they being abused, you know, by somebody? Is there incest? Is there molestation? Is it the boyfriend? Is it somebody else? Are they being pressured to abort that child? So right before the clock strikes midnight, right, they gather together and they strip parental notification from the law. And as I said, the law requires minor girls to inform their parents if they want to get an abortion, or if they have to get permission from a judge to do that. And that actually was supported by 77% of Illinoisans and 55% of Democrats. It didn't stop the lawmakers. Didn't stop them from attaching the bill as a rider to a bill that had already been voted and passed. So let's talk about it. All right. I have invited today Mary Louise Curry Hedgensball to join me. She heads up the organization Girls Health First. And you can find them at that website, girlshealthfirst.com. It's good to have her with me today. Mary Louise, thank you for what you've done over the years. And thank you for being here today. I'd love your perspective on this parental notification law. Fill me in on your perspective. What are you hearing? What did it require? I'd love your take.
Thank you, Drew. It's good to be with you. This was a good law that required that an adult family member be notified by the abortion clinic 48 hours before the clinic performed an abortion on a minor girl. And experts in girls' health and safety, anti-trafficking experts, all said that this was an essential safeguard for the protection of girls, because without it, basically anybody can take a minor girl for an abortion without her parents' knowledge or the knowledge of any adult family member. So you can imagine how that empowers predators, sex traffickers. A recent study showed that 65% of teen pregnancies are fathered by men 20 or older, which is a huge percentage. So you can imagine how this helps them to erase the evidence of their crimes. So it was really devastating that this passed, both because it puts girls at risk and also because, obviously, since parental notice took effect, abortions had really plummeted in Illinois among minors. So now we will see that increase again.
I get dumbfounded by this, and I really shouldn't. I mean, this is what's happening over and over again. I just don't see the logic or the rationality in passing a law like this. I mean, what it does is it strips protection, I think, from children, and it undermines, you know, the parental authority and a right for a parent to know what's going on with their kids. I mean, how do you argue for this? I mean, what convinced so many legislators to say, hey, this is a great idea?
Right. The opposition's argument was, this is terrible for girls who are being abused at home. But the law actually had, first of all, one of our Girls Health First women, when she was speaking to a legislator, brought this up. She said, what, is it better then to just give that girl a secret abortion and send her right back into the abusive situation? So I think that's a great question. I mean, actually, when you go through the judicial bypass procedure, there's a judge there who is not out to get her. He or she is there to help that girl get out of that situation and give her resources. So I think but even without that, the law itself had two different broad exceptions for girls who are in situations of being abused by an adult at home where they didn't have to give notification. So it's really just a red herring. They just want the money from those additional abortions that they'll get.
So fill me in. What happened that they had to do this 11:30 at night? They're just working late. I mean, what's the story behind that?
That's a great question. It's completely underhanded, Drew. I'm from Wisconsin. So when I came to Illinois, I was shocked at how things are done here. How the sausage is made. It's just horrifying. But basically, what they did was they had introduced parental notice bills during the regular session, which was last spring, and it went well into May, and they didn't have the votes to pass it. So then they had this two-week veto session where they have basically 6 days where the legislature gathers in the fall to, and it's supposed to be specifically to override any vetoes by the governor. To take those votes. But they don't do it that way. So what they did instead was they took a bill that had already passed on probate, and they added this parental notice repeal as as two amendments. And so then that way, what they were able to do is in literally less than 48 hours, they took this bill from writing it, releasing the language in the House. So when we went down Tuesday morning, we didn't have a bill number or anything. We just knew that it was coming. And what they did was the House convened at noon. We got the language for the bill then. So we were already talking with legislators saying, vote no on the parental notice repeal. And some of them were like, are we still talking about this? This is ridiculous. Didn't that go away? No, they don't want to vote on it. And so then they released it at noon on Tuesday. It went into the Senate that night. So this is, it had to be done. Everything had to be done by today because this is their last day of the veto session. And so then it went into Senate Executive Committee. They don't even have to put it into a real committee because it's just amendments. So the committee hearings are just kind of a joke because everybody already knows how everybody's going to vote. And we didn't even know when the hearing would be. It was at 3:30 that day for the Senate. That was Tuesday. Senate voted on it late that night, and they barely got the votes to pass it in the Senate. And then it went to the House. So many moderate Democrats actually voted with us or just did not vote or voted present, all of which is a good vote. Then it went to the House. Wednesday, they met at noon at 1:30. The hearing, they put it in the hearing. And we don't even know when this is. We have physicians who are ready to testify who are delivering babies. They just can't get out. Oh, okay, the hearing's in a half an hour. It's so rigged, Drew. It's just so frustrating. But anyway, and then it went to the House floor that night at 10:30 p.m. Yeah. They debated it, and the vote was at about 11:30.
So final thoughts here, Mary Louise. Is there any chance of getting a petition going to repeal the repeal or some kind of grassroots initiative like what California does? Any hope for it, or what do you see as the future of this? Or do people even care? I don't know if Illinoisans care. I would hope they do.
We do care because the polling shows that 3/4 of Illinoisans supported the parental notice bill and did not want it repealed. I think the only path forward, because our governor has already...
I'll let you finish your thought. But again, what frustrates you? You get who you vote for. You put in these legislators, this is what you're going to get. Then you got the headache to deal with on the back end, and a lot of innocent people are going to suffer. You got to do your due diligence going into the voting booth, and you got to vote morally. It's not about economics or anything else, but I'm sorry to step on you. It's just one of those things that I see the bad fruit of bad decisions, and this is what we're reaping.
That's exactly right. And the only path forward, Drew, is to vote them out. We have got to hold these legislators accountable. And, they put money, the other side had so much money, literally millions of dollars behind this, that they're offering basically to campaign coffers of those who voted with them. And so they chose money. These legislators chose money and being reelected over doing the right thing and what they know their constituents want. So we have got to help people to remember this and to vote all of those people out.
I'm with you. Well, Mary, thank you for your time and all that you do. Let me put a quick plug in for your organization, girlshealthfirst.com. What's that all about, and how will people benefit from it?
Thank you, Drew. You know, it's just, it's an outreach of Illinois Citizens for Ethics Talk. So we mobilized a lot of suburban women, even women who were pro-choice, who wanted to preserve parental notice. So we really mobilized a lot of women. We had forums in different communities raising awareness about the benefit of parental notice, how, you know, the connection between abortion and sex trafficking. And so that, and we also train girls on how to advocate as well. So we bring girls to Springfield and speak to legislators over Zoom during the pandemic and everything. So that's the point of the organization. Awesome. But yeah, so check out girlshealthfirst.com, and it's part of Illinois Citizens for Ethics PAC. It's just an outreach of that organization, which is you know, a group that works to pass good laws respecting life.
Well, keep up your good work, okay? Thank you again for all you're doing, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Drew.
All right, that's Mary Louise Curry Hedgensbaugh, and I've got to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll talk more. I'll fill you in on something I think is key to short-circuiting, not just what you're seeing in Illinois, but across the country. And it's so simple. You may not be involved in the political process. You don't have to be. But this has been proven to work time and time again. I'll fill you in.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio, your virtual parish.
Hey, thanks for joining me. It is good to be with you. You know, so much of the news we talk about sometimes could kind of have a dark overcast to it. And I'm really hopeful personally. I believe God called me to live at this particular moment in time. I know he's called you to live in this particular moment in time. We live in the greatest nation on the planet. If you're Catholic, God bless you, because you're in the fullness of the faith. You know, you've got the sacramental life of the church. And we also have gifts that have been given to us, treasures. We're going to pray the chapel. That's one of those coming up in about 10 minutes. And I would really encourage you to join me for what has been a powerhouse prayer. I'd also encourage you to pray the rosary. You can do that with Father Rocky every evening for the rosary across America. And as I heard Mary Louise Curry Hedgensbaugh just talking about the horrors that unfolded in the state of Illinois, and as I shared with you other situations that are unfolding around the nation, and I've said this to you before, we're at a pinnacle. We're approaching the apogee. We're beginning to come at this point where I believe abortion will be overturned in this country. And I really believe, just as it took, you know, 70 years for communism, the Iron Curtain, to collapse, and the Virgin Mary came in Fatima warning of what would happen with atheistic communism, I think the same thing happens here in the culture of death. This is a sinister, demonic, evil force rooted in a blood sacrifice. And you just don't legislate it away. You know, it involves prayer and fasting. As Christ said, certain demons can only be cast out through prayer and fasting. It requires prayer, fasting, and sacrifice. And heaven has given us the weapons. One of those, not just the chapel, because Faustina not only was given this to help end abortion, to protect the city that was due God's justice, but also she suffered the pains of what it felt like to go through this process. And she would do it at the very times that abortion was taking place, and normally between 8 and 11 at night. And in the area in which she lived, abortion was illegal, and the doctors who would do it illegally, that's the time at night they do it, after their practice, after their dinner, after whatever at night. The rosary, I really want to encourage you to pray it, because I really believe that will help. It'll be the chain that will bind Satan. It really will do that. You know, St. Teresa of Calcutta, she spoke at that national prayer breakfast on her thoughts of abortion, and she said, you know, the greatest destroyer of peace today in the world is abortion, right? Why? Because it's the war against the child. It's the direct killing of an innocent life. It's the murder of the mother, it's murder by the mother herself. You know, Pope Francis said, look, abortion's like hiring a hitman to solve your problems. Can you imagine that? If I had a problem with my employer or the bank or my neighbor, I hire a hitman to take care of the problem. I mean, it's absurd, right? But I think the Holy Father's comment is brilliant. I think it's such an apt description of what transpires. Mother Teresa says, if we can accept that a mother can kill even her own child, how can we tell people not to kill one another, right? How do you persuade a woman not to have an abortion? You got to do it with love. That's how you have to do it. You have to do it with love. I mean, Christ gave even his life out of love for us, right? And we need to support those mothers that have had abortion. We have to love them, let them know that God's mercy is greater than the greatest sin, the greatest mistake they've ever made, and that they have a right to it before others. You know, the father, we need to pray for him too. We need to pray for our country. And I think the rosary and the chaplet, these are two great prayers that we should be using. Mother Teresa said any country that would accept abortion, they're not teaching their people to love. You know, but they're teaching them to use violence to get what they want. And that's why abortion is the greatest destroyer of love, the greatest destroyer of peace. And now we have in the middle of the night in Illinois, legislators there taking away parental rights, right? We see the president, we see Nancy Pelosi, we see others championing this darkness, this sickness, this evil. What brings about conversion? Nothing. I don't run for office, Drew. I'm homebound, or I got to raise my kids, or I'm trying to provide for my family. Or you can pray, and I mean that. I mean, I hope it doesn't sound trite because it really isn't. Wherever you are, you can do more in a day of real prayer, real fasting than you could do in a year. You can do more than any military, any federal government. You know, that's the power of prayer. That's why I believe in it so much, and we're going to pray coming up. You know, the Mother of God, when she appeared in Portugal in 1917, she once again reminded these kids, pray my rosary, recite the rosary. You know, the popes have written that there's no problem. In fact, it wasn't the popes, it was the seer herself, Sister Lucia de Santa. She wrote about the power of the mass, of the rosary, how it's the next powerful thing next to the mass, the rosary, how important it is. She says there's not a problem. No matter how difficult it is, whether it's temporal, whether it's spiritual, whether it's in your personal life, that cannot be solved by prayer of the rosary. That was 1917. And I believe that's true. We saw the Iron Curtain collapse. It's funny, 30 years later, in the 1930s, or 20-some years later, Faustina was having her visions, we have this rosary in our left hand, and now heaven gives us this other prayer to pray against one of the greatest evils that I think civilizations have faced, and that's the murder of their children in mass. So you got the rosary and you got the chaplet. Pray with me in about 5-10 minutes here. We'll pray for an end to this culture of death, for the conversion of those who especially need it, for our legislators, and for the healing that so many needed who are wounded by this. Then join Father Rocky tonight at 7 p.m. for his rosary across America. Join us in our Memorare campaign to bring about it. You know, with the Holy Rosary, Sister Lucia said, you know, you can save yourselves, you can sanctify yourselves, that you will console the Lord, and that you will obtain the salvation of many souls. You'll St. Padre Pio, one of my favorites, powerhouse saint, right? Had all these super, he had these preternatural gifts. He could bilocate, levitate, prophesy. He would pray, they say, 36 rosaries a day. He called it his weapon. He'd say to his fellow friars, get me my weapon. You know, it's like, okay, what's that? You know, your Beretta? No, it's his rosary, right? And this really is the key. I mean, you talk to exorcists as well, and they'll tell you the power of the Virgin Mary in crushing the head of the evil one. In fact, there was Father Amarth, who's passed away now. He was doing an exorcism one time. I don't know how many of them he did, but the demon, when he began to invoke the Mother of God and began to pray the Hail Mary, this demon shrieked that if we knew how powerful the rosary was, he says, it would be my end. If Christians knew how powerful the rosary was, it would be my end. And that's what he said in this exorcism. It's effective. It's powerful. It's a means to pray and to meditate on the life of Christ, but it's also a way to bring about conversion and an end to evil. Pius XI, he said that the rosary is a powerful weapon to put demons to flight, right? To keep you from sin if you're struggling. But it's a prayer for peace. If you want peace in your hearts, if you want it in your home because there's division, if you want it in the country, and we certainly need it here, I never saw such division in the country, Pius XI said, assemble every evening and recite the rosary. You can join fathers, I said, 7 p.m. to do that. Pius IX, who's one of my favorite saints, he was the pope of the La Salette seers. He says, you know, if he had an army of people praying the rosary, he would conquer the world. That's the power of these prayers. So why don't you join me now? I'm going to pray the chaplet, a prayer given to St. Faustina, and it's one that has had a direct effect on the culture of death. It's a one that has resulted in unbelievable miracles. Pray with me now, and then pray the chaplet. And don't forget also, and I'll tell you more about it, to sign up for our novena for the Holy Souls, because we're going to have Mass, we're going to have the chaplet, and we're going to have the rosary prayed for your loved ones that have gone before you. Okay, you can go to relevantradio.com/souls. And put their names. It's absolutely free. 9 days of a blanket of prayer going over those souls. It's really important to do it. All right. So check it out. All right. Let's pray the chaplet when we come back. Here's how you get in. It's 888-914-9149. I tend to take, you know, the first 5-6 calls or so. You can always email us your intentions. And Maggie will be checking our Twitter account. That's at Drew Mariani Show. You can post some intentions there and she'll share them on the air as well. So we'll pray this this beautiful prayer. These are two great prayers, gosh, that heaven has given to us. What a privilege to be able to pray with you. We'll do that when I return. Stay with me.